Somewhat of a troubling week. Felt like clouds brewing while I was away. On the podcast this week, battling to keep my mind in a good place mentally, and the interview with my old pal Trevor, who's seen me through some of the lowest points in my life. It's My Unconventional Life. Magnifique. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way, it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? Finally finished reading Terms of Endearment this week, and fuck me, it's depressing. God, it makes life sound so shallow and duplicitous. Tales of infidelity, emotionless facade-like relationships. I want a relationship that is true and totally open and honest. I don't want to ever live a lie again, even a small one. I want to live a true life where I am truly my authentic self with kindness and love, but without apology. I mean, they say the truth sets you free, and I certainly felt that before. Plus, I just believe it's the best gift I can give my children. Nonetheless, I have found myself slipping back into a non-mindful state of mind most of this week. Feeling this time, however, a little confused and unsettled instead of jealous and vulnerable. But I guess, at least if I'm aware of it, it's somewhat mindful. I'm mindful that I'm not being mindful, which is a start. And I know that I need to start meditating twice a day again too. But it has been another emotional week. Something was troubling Erie, and I knew it right away, but I gave her the space to let her process the feelings. She's been feeling similarly emotional to me in ways that we hadn't experienced before or for so long, and it's a little frightening. When she eventually told me, it was about a conversation we'd had where she told me I could move in with her if I wanted, and she felt I'd been a little cold when I reiterated that I wanted to keep my own place. She had mentioned it a few times before, and to be fair, I had mentioned how lovely it would be to live together in one of the big houses we walked by on our walk to the coffee shop in the future when our kids were growing up, if I was making more money. So it was perhaps somewhat of a miscommunication. It was really made much worse because these new emotions made her far more sensitive. This was further exacerbated then when we talked about how I can't sleep when her dog sleeps on the bed. Because her dog doesn't sleep. She gets up and yelps and walks around on top of us and scratches her head and thumps against the mattress, waking me up constantly throughout the night. And I tried to do it for a few weeks, but it just killed me. So Erie put her dog in her doggy bed in a big mesh kennel in the lounge, but I think started to feel guilty and resentful towards me about it, even though I never actually asked her to do it. She feels the dog will get used to me eventually and calm down, and I'll be able to sleep. But I said, I can't wait a year to find out. Sleep is super important to me. You just need it to be healthy. I'm okay if she wants to continue sleeping with the dog. I don't feel like she's choosing her over me. I just have to be able to get a good night's sleep at least a few nights a week. I think she felt hurt and disappointed, like I hated her dog, which isn't true at all. And again, she's just more sensitive about things at the moment. Either way, I could detect the distance and reticence in her voice when we talked on the phone about it that I hadn't felt before, which concerned me. and it felt like a big wedge had been driven between us. It worried her too. She felt perhaps it was a sign that I wouldn't want to stick it out with a baby crying all the time and I'd just leave her to it. But I think with your own child, it's different. I know what I'm signing up for. With the dog, we just have conflicting energies when it comes to sleeping. That's all there is to it. I was perfectly happy having the dog around, just not on the bed when I'm trying to sleep. Hopefully it won't be a deal breaker. When I got back to LA and we hung out again, almost all these negative emotions seemed to dissipate. So that's a good sign. I've really been trying to understand and process these new emotions. I think ultimately, a lot of the jealousy that I was feeling before came from a fear of loss that I never had felt before because my parents had always made me feel so secure and supported. On reflection though, I found myself settling back into the idea that ultimately, we all are alone. Or together, depending on how you view human beings and life on Earth. But either way, you can't cling on to things or people, as much as we may try. You have to let them live and act freely. They have to be with you out of choice, not obligation or expectation. And if you can, try to remember that life is already written. And then a lot of these newer unsettled emotions come, I think, from how I only remember the monogamous relationships I've been in before in a largely negative light because of how painfully and traumatically they ended and have never really been mended. I don't remember many of the good times because the emotions of those times pale in comparison, unfortunately, to those of when they ended. So you can understand why I might feel a little perturbed facing a potentially monogamous relationship again. Although the idea is that this one will be far more open to discussions of opening up if and when the desire appears. I don't know. A lot of emotions. And we try for kids again next week. The interview this week is with Trevor, one of my dearest old friends who lived with me for a few months in 2007, sleeping on the couch in my studio apartment. He has seen me at my very lowest, in the depths of two of the most traumatic relationships I've ever been in, and has always been a wonderful friend throughout it all. We see things in very different ways sometimes, but it's never an issue. We're both looking for that same elusive happiness and fulfillment in life, which we discuss here. Oh, and for the record, it was taped the night I was feeling ultra vulnerable and jealous about Eri. So bear that in mind. It's just turned midnight. We are in Orlando, Florida, and I am with one of my oldest and most dear friends in the world, Mr. Trevor Varney. How are you, my friend?
Excellent. Thanks for having me come over and hang out. It's been a while since we've had this much private time.
It is. It has been a long time. Now, you've seen me go through a lot of stuff in my life. We first met at wrestling school. I've been there a couple of years, I think, by that time, and I was a little bit established, and we became friends. But we almost, I think, became more friends outside of wrestling, after wrestling, right?
I don't think our wrestling relationship was very strong, probably.
Right, yeah.
Oddly enough.
So what was it then? Why have we formed this sort of friendship to where I almost see you as sort of like a younger brother or someone that I talk to all the time?
I think I always looked up to your road tripping. Like, you always wanted to be the person I wanted to ride with. Like, it was never like, I can't wait to wrestle this guy, but I'm like, oh man, I hope I get in the car with Nigel.
Why?
You're just entertaining.
Well, I remember you always used to tell me when you'd call me up wherever it was we were each living, and you'd go, I only call you up because I like to hear how bad your life is going.
That wasn't the first 10 years.
Because I'd always paint, no matter what was happening, I'd always paint it in a negative light.
Negative Nigel.
Yeah. You know, I'd always talk about McGinnising the situation and how I'd have this bad luck and stuff. And let's be honest, I kind of did have a couple of bad sort of turns in my life, but everybody does. And I've realized now that a lot of it was not necessarily my own doing, but it was my perception of those events that had as big a bearing on it than actually the events themselves. And once I sort of realized that and let it go, things sort of turned around and became very sort of positive in my life. So you've known me, as I said, for a long time, and you've known my worldviews have been a bit strange and unusual.
Do you think I stole your joy? Because we're like exact opposites. Like, I could wreck my car and have a better day than I did the day before.
How so?
Like, you seem to always have a negative situation.
Well, I seem to
always have a positive situation.
Yeah,
you're one of these people.
Sure, you're one of these people that always sort of just looks on the bright side, on the positive side of things. And I don't know how to say this.
Do you think it's intelligence? Like, I don't know any better. I'm like a dog and I'm just like, everything's great all day.
No, but you are quite, I guess, I don't want to say simple, but you're quite present in the sense of you live in the moment and you like things and you like experiences. And if you have those things and experiences, you're happy. And then when you don't have them anymore, you're not happy, so you just want to get more of those experiences. Now, you can make an argument and say, well, that's not going to last forever. You're never going to be truly happy, but...
Well, that's what motivates me to keep working and trying to be successful.
Right.
Is to keep continuing these experiences.
Yeah.
The problem is they get bigger and bigger in life. Like, now I want a boat.
Right.
Because I have a cool car. But then, like, then after that's a helicopter. Like, where does it... You're right. Like, at some point... It's either going to catch up or I'm just going to have to be satisfied with the things I have.
Yeah, but there is more to your life than just your work, of course. You're married and at some point you're going to have kids as well. So you do get a sense that there is more to life than just material
things.
Well,
you just said it right there. Like, where does it stop? The kids. The kids are like the ultimate.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So, like, I think I'll stop caring about experiences and things more once I have kids.
That's an interesting concept. Interesting idea. I wonder how it will change me, because as I sit here now, and I don't know, Erie might be pregnant at the moment. I'm not sure. By the time this airs, we'll probably know one way or the other. But even the concept of having a child with her has, I don't want to say it's changed my outlook on the world, because it hasn't, but it's presented these feelings of jealousy and anxiety that are so strong that I'm really questioning everything about how I truly feel, and I haven't figured it all out, you know. And even here tonight, I've got that sort of tightness in my chest.
That's
and
love.
Is that what it is?
It's miserable and it's terrible and it's great and it's wonderful and it'll fucking kill you. But it'll be the best thing that ever happened to you.
But is that how you feel now? Do you feel jealous and possessive?
No, and that's why I married the wife that I have.
Right.
But I can tell you, she doesn't do anything to make me feel that way, which is great.
Right.
But if she said, hey, I'm going to go out tonight till 2 in the morning and I lost my phone, fuck yeah. I'm fucking going nuts. But she's in bed at 9 and texts me and I know she's safe in the house and the alarm's set and she's happy and she knows I'm doing the same thing. So that's, there's that comfort.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. And you guys, that's what you want. And that's the way you're designed. And I guess I always felt like, I don't know if I always felt this way, but I felt most recently that that wasn't the way I designed. And Erie and my relationship is obviously very different than your relationship with your wife. We got into it with the express purpose of having a child. And it has sort of developed organically into a very loving relationship, and now we've been sexually intimate as well. It, to all intents and purposes, she feels like my girlfriend. You know, we do the same sort of things, and we say the same sort of things to each other, and the only thing we haven't sort of said is, let's be in a committed relationship. Now, we have talked about it, and what she said is, look, you don't need to place any labels on it. Let's just be honest and open about our emotions as we move forward. And that's what I feel very strongly positive about, because I just think that the best relationships are relationships where you can communicate openly and authentically and freely with your partner. And that's hard to do when there's emotions involved sometimes, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to be able to communicate, but there's like certain rules you don't communicate, and you never got that.
What does that mean?
Let's just use an example. Like, if I'm gonna drive the car 150 miles an hour on the way home, I might not tell my wife. She wouldn't like that. So I wouldn't. If she asks, I'm not going to lie. Like, oh, how fast did you go? That's never going to pop up. So
yeah.
You've got to learn to enjoy. Like, that's every relationship. I mean, I grew up.
But then wait a second.
I grew up watching Married with Children, these shows. I mean, this is what I view as a, like, solid relationship. That.
So you're saying that within a relationship, it's okay if there's some degree of, I don't want to say deceitfulness, but there's some degree of withholding or not volunteering information if it's not needed. Because
absolutely.
With Eri, what I love about it is that, at least on our discussions, we've decided to not withhold any
information. Okay, let me ask you this. You're at our house.
Yeah.
Your stomach's hurting real bad.
Yeah.
You got to use the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to go there? Are you going to make a scene with it? Are you going to, or do you just...
I won't make a scene there, but I would go there quietly.
And... Right. You don't come out and tell her about it, do you?
No, but she knows exactly what I was doing.
Yeah, but you still try and kayfabe it. You still spray some air freshener and be like, oh, I had to make a phone call in there real quick.
I don't know.
Like,
we're on tenuous ground because it's where you place that line. For you, it's driving your car at 150 miles an hour. For some guys, it's cheating on their significant others. And they go, well, what they don't know won't harm them. And I don't think that's the case.
Of course.
Right. So where do you draw the line? And that's the interesting thing. And I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive to think that Eri and I can and should be completely open with our emotions and our desires. But
I think I draw the line with how I want to be treated. And I think my wife views the same thing. So.
Right.
I might use the guest bathroom if I'm not feeling well, and I think she might too. So we have the same, we have the same views. So it's only you and your partner can decide where those boundaries are.
Right, and so there has to be a discussion of those boundaries.
Like, and we talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, I probably wouldn't go out to a bar tonight and jump on the train and go somewhere because I wouldn't want her to do that. Like, literally everything, like. The problem is, I guess there is some part where maybe there's something I wouldn't mind her doing that I do that she might not like. But, when you use that treat others how you want to be treated kind of thing, and we both have the same morals and kind of attitude towards our relationship, then it ends up with the same goal of...
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But you could make an argument that Eri and I are in the exact same position, you know? We're trying to treat each other as we'd want to be treated. And, you know, I'd want to... know her feelings and emotions, and because I've got so much invested in her, you know, if we have a kid together, this person
will be the biggest thing you'll ever do in your life.
The one person that I love more than myself on this earth.
What if you don't love your kid? Like, what if he's just an asshole? Did you ever think of that?
It's funny, isn't it? I have friends who have kids, and their significant other, for whatever reason, didn't love their kid in the same way. I mean, they may say they love their kid, but the way they acted, they weren't willing to give up significant portions of their life for the betterment of that child. And so I sometimes feel like, oh, wow. I mean, I guess it's not necessarily a natural thing for everyone.
I don't think I would.
No?
Financially, I plan on giving absolutely nothing to my kids.
You say that now.
No. I mean, clothes, food, shelter. I mean, that's different, but I plan on having no 401k, zero savings account. If I die tomorrow, my biggest fear is if I die tomorrow, not doing something. Like, if I had 10 bucks in my account, I'm like, fuck, I should have got that extra drink at the bar. Or I should have bought my wife that extra thing for I want nothing left for my kids or anyone I know.
That's interesting. But it'd be interesting to see how you feel once you've had your kid, because people have said that to me, and to a certain extent I disagree, because a lot of people said, well, listen, when you have a kid, you'll forget all this stuff about non-monogamy, you'll forget this stuff about parenting partnerships, and you'll want to get into a committed relationship, you'll probably marry the girl, and you'll live happily ever after, and that's the person you are. And it sort of made me feel that it sounded like they were saying that my beliefs weren't true and genuine.
But there's a difference between intelligence and beliefs. Like, as I say that, my dog's the most spoiled dog. He gets whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
My kids won't, because I'm actually doing them a favor by not giving them what they want. You have to know the difference between right and wrong, and if you spoil your kid, they turn out to be assholes.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be setting my kid up for failure by giving him everything he wants at a young age.
Right.
You have to be smarter than your feelings.
Yep, I can see that. That makes sense.
So that's 100%. I mean, I want my kid to be... I had like just enough to get by, but, you know, when I turned 18, I was on my own. I see other people with their kids in their mid-20s, and they're still paying their rent and car payment. Like, that hurts the kid more than it hurts them.
Right.
Because it takes 10 years to figure life out.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up. And I'm 33. Like, I feel... And at least I have, like, money and things and, like, a few wife, and we're getting ready to have a kid... A lot of people didn't even get that opportunity until 10 years later because they were so supported and coddled by their parents.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
I
mean,
18 years old, I was on my own, so I had a lot of time to figure this out.
Right, yeah, that makes sense, and I'm on the same page. But you listened to the interview that I did with my friend Alan, and you said that was your favorite one because, and I quote, he calls you out on your shit. Now,
yeah.
Explain that exactly. What was it that, you know, I'm sort of... not being honest and genuine
about.
Well,
he has kids, first off.
Right.
So
he has a kid.
Okay. Well, he has more...
Hands-on experience
over myself to call you on your bullshit, because I don't have a kid, so I don't...
Okay.
But everything that he said, it sounds like every other parent I've ever talked to.
Yeah. Which was what, though, precisely?
Kids are way fucking harder than you think they are.
No, I know how hard they're going to be. I'm fully aware of how hard this is going
to be. And I think you're going to care more... than you think you do.
I will care a lot about them, and I will care a lot about Eri. I love Eri deeply. I really do.
I think you're going to be surprised at the relationship, how strong you're going to feel about her. But I mean, you're already feeling it right now.
I already am there, absolutely.
And that's why I told you, like, you want to have sex to make this baby. You don't want to, you know, artificially do it, because you're going to want that bond. And I think you're going to want to sleep in the same bed and be next to the kid together. I think that's going to be difficult to separate those two.
Right. So in terms of being non-monogamous, you're saying that I won't want to do that, or it will be unfeasible, or what do you think?
I just think it's emotionally going to be hard. You have to be smarter than your feelings.
It is.
Because to say you're not going to feel those feelings is wrong. To make the decision not to get married is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with, you know, lots of guys in Hollywood date girls for a long time and don't marry them.
Sure.
They still have relationships with them. Hmm. I don't think you have to forcefully have other relationships to make that one less meaningful to you emotionally. Like, it's okay to give her all your emotion. I feel like you want to spread your emotions thin so you don't give all of it to one person.
No, that's not it at all. And I think that's a big misconception about this idea of non-monogamy. When you talk about emotion, you're talking about love. And that if I give some love to her and I give someone love to someone else, and I'm splitting my love among these people. And what I've found from people who've lived truly non-monogamous life is that love is not finite. We don't have a certain amount of love to give people, and that if I give some to her, there's less to give to her.
Well, you're talking attention, not love. There's only a certain amount
of time and money. Absolutely. That is a very valid point. And to maintain a relationship, you have to give it a certain amount of time. But there is enough time in the day, in the week, to have more than one relationship. And I think everyone would accept that. You can have more than one loving relationship, but most people wouldn't accept that more than one of those loving relationships can be sexual in nature. So if it's about time, then it's not really the issue, because people don't have the issue. If I said, oh, I've got...
But that's not something you want at all or have ever wanted?
What?
Like, LeBron James is one of my heroes.
Hmm.
One of the things I like about him, he's been with his high school sweetheart girlfriend before he was... I mean, he was kind of famous at like 15 because he was so talented, but he stuck with that girl. He's been with her ever since. So I think that's part of why he's such a good investor, athlete, brand, everything. Because I think when you take that aspect, like 90% of most people's time is spent meeting the right person. So because my wife and I are so great, like literally 90% of my time, I can focus on my business and doing other things because she's always right there with me. So like to me, I see that bonded relationship and like I want that. And like not only do I want it to be like the focus, because if you focus on that being great, then it's so much easier for everything else in life, it seems.
Well, it's all well and good, and that's perfectly valid if that's what you want.
Right, that's what I'm saying, but you don't want that at all.
That's the thing, though. Do I want it? Do I not want it? And this is the interesting thing, because I've been in long-term monogamous relationships before, and I don't know, some of them were good, and some of them, as you very well know, were not good and were not healthy, and they really messed me up a lot. So,
well, and that's what's tough.
Yeah.
I met a guy today. He's like, Yeah, I went looking for a Suzuki motorcycle. Uh-huh. I had a Yamaha once and it broke down. I'll never drive a Yamaha again. Right. The same thing happened with Nissan. Never drive another Nissan. I'm like, okay, well, one, your Nissan's one of the most reliable cars on the street.
Yeah.
But because he had one bad experience with one 20 years ago, he doesn't want to touch one. So it's like, where do you have your open-mindedness to expand beyond that?
Right. But if you look at the world and, you know, 6 out of 10 Nissans break down, you'd go, oh, I probably don't want to be in a Nissan. So that's the reality when you look at...
It's more like 90% probably, yeah, too. So.
Right. You know, the statistics are quite staggering. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try it at all. It just means that you've really got to pick a partner well. And I feel like I have with Eri.
What was the divorce rate back in like the 50s? Is that like a statistic that you know?
Not off the top of my head, but it was much lower. But that
like how much lower?
I would guess in the 50s and 60s, divorce rate was probably... 10%.
Yeah. Now it's 50?
50 to 60%.
Yeah. Right.
But this is the thing. That's a misleading statistic because divorce was so difficult back in those days and you could never do it that most people who were really unhappy in their marriage didn't get divorced. They probably cheated on each other and weren't happy and really suffered a lot when arguably they never should have got married in the first place, but just did it because that was what you
did. I mean, I can see both points of view. Like, I see it when you say that, and I can picture those people in my head, but then I can also picture, like, beautiful families and Christmas and great green grass and, like, and, no smog in the air.
And given what you know about crime. Given what you know about the world, which is more likely the case in most of those situations.
Well, I think the grass is always greener on the other side. People under 25, like, they have no fucking patience. Like, they want everything now. Hmm. They want to get married now. And then they want to get divorced now. Like, there's no, they have no relevance of time.
I guess so.
The technology speeds that up for you.
Right.
We didn't have that option. I mean, think about this. I don't think I have one picture of me and you wrestling. I don't have one. I have, like, two pictures of me from fans, and I wrestled from 2002... until like 2009.
Yeah.
So for 7 straight years I wrestled, I have like 3 pictures. There was no iPhone. You couldn't just take a picture backstage. Like all these cool experiences I have in my head. That's it. And stories. And that's what's so great, you know, because you experience the same stories or even if you weren't there for that, I would tell you about, you know, meeting Orlando Jordan backstage and I could tell you that story and you could experience that. But there's no picture to like, you know, when I talk to my wife about it, I used to write, like, she's got no fucking clue. I can't, like, oh, check out, like, the technology is just different.
Yeah.
And it's, I think if you were born, if you were in, like, middle school starting in, like, 2008 and past, like, you had a whole nother life.
Yeah.
Like, I had a beeper, and that got taken away from me. And then, like, cell phones came out in, like, 03, 04 when they were, like, pretty regular.
Yeah.
But then texting got big, and... I mean, it's just everything's changed. So people now have no patience. They're assholes. I mean, this is...
I mean...
It's difficult for the younger generation. I feel bad for them because they don't have as much opportunity either.
I guess so. I don't really know enough about it, to be honest with you. I don't know enough people of that age to really make that sort of decision. All I can talk about is my own sort of experience. And I guess that's really what we're talking about here, isn't it? Is that... Say what you want about
statistics. But I think when you see those, like, those numbers and all the other people's feelings fuck with your head.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just trying to be authentic and I'm trying to go with my gut instinct. And I remember a year or two ago, 3 years ago, when I first went to Sex Positive Los Angeles, and I remember hearing all these people telling the same sort of story that I have, this notion of, well, I loved more than one person and I was attracted to more than one person, but I thought there was something wrong with me and that, well, it's not true love. If it's true love, then you're not attracted to someone else. And when I met other people that felt the same way, I was like, this is what I am. Okay, this is why I felt so sort of uncomfortable on and off for the last, 10 years of my life, you know?
Well, I think that's because there's like 10 aspects to a relationship.
Yeah.
You've got sex, how good of friends you are.
Right.
Can you, I mean, like one of the things about me and my wife, we work together.
Hmm.
We literally spend 24 hours a day with each other. We've spent so much time together that, like, we never fight. And then, like, the night I go out for 4 hours, we'll fight because we're just so accustomed. And I know that sounds fucking crazy. I mean, I'd want to beat myself up if I told myself that 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But you got these, like, 10 things. So it's not just love.
Well, these 10 things are different for
money.
Different
money is a big issue. A lot of couples fight over money. Yep. If you take money off the table, this is one of the reasons me and my wife don't fight. We don't have money issues.
Right.
And I think this is a combination. We can spend a lot of time with each other and not fight. You know, we don't have the money issues. We do love each other. We do have lots of sex. We do have all these things. So I could see where, like, if you're missing one of these things, you would want that somewhere else. And I think see. A lot, and I think it's really difficult for someone to find someone with all 10 things.
Exactly.
And I don't know if it'll be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it will, and I'm sure my wife would say the same thing. We want to, but you have to work for it as well. And it's really hard. And I think we spend all day working on these 10 things together.
Yeah.
It's fucking hard.
Nope, it's good. And you're a good advertisement for it. No doubt about it.
But if you can't find that, I mean, I've definitely been in terrible relationships too. Yeah. So, I mean, I get where you're coming from. So, and I would say that you're better off doing what you're doing than settling.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, if you find that girl, you know, if Ari turns out to be the 10 out of 10, you know, whatever those steps are, and you guys decide to work on those together. And I mean, because you got to be on the same page. There's one of the 10.
Yeah.
You got to both want to be in a relationship. If one doesn't and one does, I mean, so all it takes is one or two out of this 10 to throw off the whole relationship.
It does. You're right. Am I crazy? Am I crazy for trying it this way, do you think?
No. Why? I mean, with the kid or the relationship or what?
Both. Bit of both. I mean, you know, am I crazy to try and have a child with somebody outside of a traditional relationship?
I mean, I'm the wrong person to ask. I think you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife, I get made fun of all the time. Like, I was watching a baseball game the other day. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could play for the Rays. Like, I literally have no, I think I could be the CEO of Apple. Like, I have no relevance either to how good or bad I am.
Yeah.
Or I'm just not scared to try fucking anything.
Right.
And I mean that. Like, I would run Apple tomorrow.
Yeah.
You would love the iPhone. It would be phenomenal.
That's admirable, mate. It's admirable. And, you know, it's served you reasonably well. I mean, you're pretty happy in life, right?
Yeah, extremely happy. Mm. And for someone who's not living their dream, like, that's the crazy part.
Right.
I mean, I had the same fucking dream when we all did. Since I know some people think they wanted it more, and, you know, you hear Daniel Bryan, and you see the story, and, like, I was fucking 12 doing backflips off my trampoline, hitting my friends with steel chairs, too. Like, we all had the same dream. A lot of people made it way further and got to live way more of it, you know?
Yep, absolutely did. And it's all about perception. I realized that in the last year as well. What you put out into the universe is what comes back. Right. Tune in next week for part 2, when we go further down the rabbit hole of my psychological evaluation. And perhaps what I can learn from it. Not keep going into the future. Well, what happens if this happens? What happens if this? Don't overthink, you know?
You're like my grandpa when he reads the news.
I'm probably like your grandfather in many ways, not just that. I'll see you next week. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth, another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule.